Welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and for this episode, Tim chatted to entrepreneur Daniel Pudyk, who is responsible for successful online retailer Sunglasses Shop and most recently activewear brand Sundried. He lets us in on how the referendum and the ensuing uncertainty have affected his business and how he plans to continue producing sustainably amid potentially rising costs. If you like the show, or even if you don't, I suppose, we'd really appreciate it if you could rate us on your podcast platform of choice, and while you're there, you might as well subscribe so you can get all upcoming episodes sent straight to your phone. If you want to leave suggestions for future guests or just say hi, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
It's a warm welcome to our next guest, Daniel Pudyk, who's Managing Director at Sundried, which is an activewear brand, which he started last year. Previously, he founded and ran Sunglasses Shop, an online retailer, for 15 years. So, Daniel, how are you? And do you only start businesses with sun as the first syllable?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. And if you go back further, they didn't all have sun at the front, but after doing Sunglasses Shop, I'm guessing that sort of has impregnated into my sort of into my mind, hence Sundried now. But I like the sun, and Sundried, everything kind of that people sort of hear that word and the associations with it, so it works for me.
Definitely bright and positive. Now, the reason we wanted to speak to you was because as a business owner, and the way you employed staff, and obviously when you set up Sunglasses Shop back in 2001, we chatted previously, and you said you did employ many staff from over the EU, yeah. And I wanted to learn a little bit about your experiences of that and how they were as employees, and perhaps some of the challenges that you faced at the time.
Sure, exactly. So would you like me to lead, or are you going to kind of fire away with?
Yeah, please. If you can just take me through it a little bit. So I guess if you tell us a little bit about Sunglasses, how many staff you had initially and where you recruited from.
Sure, of course. So Sunglasses Shop, it was very much what you'd call an organic business. So started with just myself. My brother joined in the early days, fresh out of university. And in the initial days of hiring, it was sort of friends. I took a few other sort of friends on. And then we used to use the job centre a lot and their free sort of recruitment services just to kind of pick up local staff. In the early days, we weren't really after kind of professionals, more sort of, people to kind of just do general admin jobs. But as a business grew, we started to recruit more professionals and people with specific experience. And then after about 6-7 years, as the company really started to develop, we were probably at about 10 or 15 staff. We really started to actively go after international markets, European to start with. And our first local market we went after was Denmark, and we chose this market just based on the sales that was coming through our UK website. So our .co.uk website address, we noticed there seemed to be a lot of sales coming from Denmark, so we thought, okay, let's test whether setting up a local website, .dk website address was going to be the right thing to do, and the challenges sort of around that we had to kind of deal with as we went on.
Sure. So at this point, was everything, all the fulfillment was coming from Britain still, though?
Correct, yes. So the time up until I sold the company, we kept all the fulfillment from the UK in the one location. So typically Sunglasses, most of the designer eyewear is from Italy, it's from Europe, but it's a distributor sort of in the UK. So our stock was with us in the UK, and we'd run all the fulfillment out of our address in Southend-on-Sea.
I see. So when you set up the Danish website, did that prove successful?
Yeah, yes, it was very successful. And we we were kind of early to the market. So we took basically the biggest online collection of sunglasses available for next day delivery. We had always sort of driven a message of excellent customer services, and we took that market to Denmark. And we, you know, in, overnight we were the kind of had the biggest collection of eyewear in Denmark. You know, a relatively small market, but we got market saturation quite quickly. There's challenges that we had to kind of learn and deal with as we went on, ranging from buying the domain name through to the characters, how they worked in our website code. They have, you know, extra letters that we don't have in the UK. There were sort of technical issues that we just dealt and we dealt with as we sort of went on. But obviously, you can't just translate your website. You can't use software to just translate it, because to a local it will read like you have run it through a translation piece of software. And also our customer services meant we had to have a local Danish person employed to speak to customers on the phone, speak to customers via email, and understand their payment methods, because they expect different sort of payment services. I think Klarna was one of their sort of, and cash on delivery, those sorts of things that we're not really used to in the UK. They're all new to us.
So because this is the Brexit podcast, and we're interested on how you as a British businessman will deal with countries both in the EU and then potentially out of the EU, which is a position we're moving towards. What would you, do you see it would have been, or maybe you tried to do this, but if you were trying to set up in a non-EU country, would that have been more of a challenge?
Well, the non-EU, so we did try. We took on a, towards the peak of the sunglasses shop, we had 50 staff. We had about 15 local language websites. Now, our Spanish candidate, we launched a Spanish website, but we also launched a website at South America, and it was very difficult. I mean, getting the website up there and sort of attracting customers to buy was very straightforward, but selling to companies and where the recipient has to pick up various tax and import duties and customs charges, those sorts of things, it was very, very complicated, and customers would be sprung. It doesn't matter how much you tell a customer that you're going to have to pay tax when you receive this product. They never know, and you're picking up a higher shipping charge to go to South America. So to a non-EU country for us, America was okay for us, and we didn't have a local site for America, but for sort of out of the EU, it was very tricky for us to ship to.
Okay, so I guess the question is, given the current position and potentially the current uncertainty that we've got in the country, would you have started Sunglasses Shop today?
I mean, at the time there was a window of opportunity for us. The sunglasses market was relatively untapped online. The competition wasn't great. There weren't sort of the big department stores offering eyewear. So if I saw that opportunity now, I would take it. But there's new challenges, and I heard on the news today they're going to make you sort of employ sort of people in the UK first before taking someone from overseas. I'm not too sure sort of, you know, how that's going to be enforced. I just heard a headline on the radio today. But I would start a project like that today. But there would be sort of challenges, definite staffing challenges, and I've got no idea sort of what shipping implications that there would be, because obviously getting product off the UK, off our island, is always more expensive than if you have a hub in sort of mainland Europe, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but you have started a new business recently. You've started Sundried. Started
yes.
Last year, as we said at the start, the activewear brand. Now, I noticed that you had some seed funding from the Low Carbon Innovation Fund, which are based in Southend.
Yes.
Where does that money come from?
So the Low Carbon Innovation Fund, that was a it's a university grant, it's government money, and the seed funding was a sort of a match funded. We took that October last year, and they were meant to be investing in 2016 as well, which unfortunately their grant, I'm not sure if it's pulled or but basically the changing kind of government and their funding meant no longer money to them. So whether that's linked to Brexit or not, I'm not too sure, but which is why we've recently been to Crowdcube, because in my business plan, we always knew we had to fund in 2016 after our initial seed funding. So it's been sort of a whole new challenge for us to kind of find new investors, but we've treated it as a marketing exercise as well.
Yeah, I did do a little bit of research, and I did try and find more about the Low Carbon Innovation Fund. There's sort of scant information on the government website, and the actual website for it itself is down or maybe deceased. So I was just trying to find out whether it was European money originally that was then recycled back to you. But I couldn't find that one out for myself either. But you did talk there about Crowdcube, which is crowdfunding.
Yes.
So now, how much were you looking to crowdfund? Was it successful? And also, where was the bulk of the money coming from?
So with crowdfunding, the way it works is it's an all-or-nothing game. So if you go out and you say you want to raise £150,000, if your crowd money only gets to £140,000, you don't get any money at all. So you have to go out with, one, a realistic valuation that people in mass will believe. So it has to be sort of they have to believe the valuation of your company. And two, you have to come out with a figure, raise a figure that you believe you can achieve. Now, with the crowd, it's all about momentum, and people like to invest in something that looks successful. So if you launch a pitch, even if it's the best brand and the best business idea in the world, if you don't get that initial momentum, get it to sort of the first 100 investors, the first 25% raise, the first 50% raise, you need to kind of be behind that momentum. So with the process, what was new to me or what was maybe I hadn't realized was how much work I would have to put into my own network to get the ball rolling, to really kind of drum up that initial investment and sort of go after kind of my own network to put their hand in their pockets, even if it's just for £10, £20, just to start the ball rolling and to build the momentum. I think we've got just under 200 investors on Crowdcube, and we've recently closed and issuing certificates just of a few days ago. So I've been going through the locations, and our investors are getting offered EIS, Enterprise Investment Scheme. So that's some sort of tax relief the government offers. And I'd say probably about sort of 5 to 10% of the investors are from outside the UK as well, a few from Spain. Typically they're Europe, but there's quite a few that aren't paying tax in the UK, so they're not applicable for EIS.
I see. Okay. And do you know what? Anything will change with that if when Article 50 is invoked?
To be quite honest, I'm not too sure. I heard a rumour from someone that EIS and these things may not be here to stay. I'm not too sure, to be quite honest. They're just things that I've heard. I don't know sort of how quickly those sorts of things will change or can change. I think sort of it's a great idea to encourage. I can see it's a great benefit for the government, because it encourages private individuals to invest in businesses, and the government doesn't have to put their own sort of money on the table, if you like, directly into these businesses. So it's a great sort of scheme. Whether or not it will continue or the impact, I'm not too sure. If you're looking to set up a new business and you sort of pop into Google, government grants, there's thousands of kind of old grants on the government website linked to various sort of areas throughout the country. And when you click through, a lot of these funds have stopped or dried up. So I'm not too sure if it's directly related to potential future changes, but it doesn't look good for kind of new businesses when all these grants are kind of, you know, they look exciting until you click through, and then you realize they're no longer. So I think I think grant money is getting harder to obtain.
Sure. Sundried as a brand is built on environmental values, a sustainable supply line, provenance, these kind of buzzwords.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have concerns that it will become just too expensive to produce responsibly sourced activewear?
To be quite honest, yes, I certainly do. We have a personal trainer network, and they're acting as ambassadors to us, and their feedback is, you know, we need to make our clothes cheaper to the customers, and we can't compete with, I won't mention the brands, but they, you know, they're trying to kind of convince their customers to buy our products, but we're a lot, our product costs more, and that is the price it costs to produce products within Europe and using fabrics from sustainable sources. It's just what it costs. And in the last kind of couple of weeks, with the pound falling against euro, our costs are only going to go up. So we're working on our 2017 collection at the moment. Even if we produce the same products, they've gone up by, you know, 5-10% already, and that's going against the feedback of our personal trainers. I'm not too sure yet how we're going to convince people to pay the higher price point. We keep asking the personal trainer just let the customers know about the ethical message, but I think consumers will only pay so much when they're getting waved in front of their face sort of discounts and deals from kind of fast fashion you know, these big sort of brands out there.
Daniel, what's your best-selling product?
Our best-selling product is our Oddity and our Dom Tee. They're sort of training T-shirts, and they're kind of the core products.
And what would they retail at currently?
So our technical T-shirt, the retail point is £50, and the more lifestyle product is £40. So
right.
they're not sort of... If you look at the current price point in one of the bigger brands and compare like for like, then it's probably fairly similar. But, you know, if you go on kind of the typical discount marketplaces out there, you can pick up T-shirts for £5 or £10. And it's not something we'll ever be able to do as a brand, not using sort of sustainable fabrics and making it kind of close to home.
Yes. And you think it will get more challenging as Britain leaves the European Union?
100%, yes. So in terms of kind of the cost of the fabrics and the cost of manufacturing, it's already got more expensive for us. It may work out that it's cheaper for people to buy our product from Europe, and which means that we're going to have to market overseas more, where the pound... where they can afford to buy our products more. So that wasn't in my initial business plan, but that may be something that we have to evolve towards.
Okay. And just finally, you're based down in Southend-on-Sea, I believe?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Great. So as the name suggests, you're close to the coast. On Brexit, was immigration seen as an issue amongst the local voters?
To the people I sort of meet with, it wasn't necessarily a big deal. But I do believe that I think I live in quite a conservative area, but sort of Shoebriness, sort of up the road and the neighbouring towns, I think that was quite a strong UKIP voting sort of, you know, you saw lots of the signs. I think that whole area voted UKIP. So I guess there were kind of, you know, there are issues amongst the local area, but it's not something sort of I hear a lot of talk about now.
Okay. What I'm guessing from a business perspective and maybe a personal one that you would be a Remainer in the debate.
Yep.
Were there other key reasons that you would choose to vote Remain?
Well, I think sort of I tried to look at it, all the information that was presented to us, and listen to the information that all the world leaders, the respectable world leaders, were providing, and everyone who I kind of followed in business and respect in business seemed to think that remaining was the right thing to do, and they've got a data analyst around them and a lot more sort of wealth of information. So I didn't feel the uncertainty was something I wanted to sort of I didn't want to take a gamble on that, and I felt I'd done very well with Sunglasses Shop, and people do complain about sort of various issues, but I think everyone who I know personally are in a great position in our country, and maybe things could be better, but it's not something I'd want to kind of put a vote against to change, because I think everyone's got it very good, and if it goes the other way, we could all run the risk of upsetting what we've grown to kind of become accustomed to.
Now, look, I know you practice what you preach a little bit, and we both have a bit of a love of triathlon.
Yes, indeed.
And
yep.
I know you've taken up triathlon. So you're going to be keeping up European relations by doing a few events on the continent?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to. So, in terms of my tri club, quite a few people have been in Mallorca recently. There's some Ironman out there. Sundry is actually doing its own triathlon in 2017 in Southend-on-Sea. It's probably the biggest town that doesn't have a triathlon, and we've got a lovely stretch of beach. And I'm not going to go into the politics, but there's a lot of hoops that we're jumping through at the moment, in terms of obviously health and safety, it's a big thing, especially with the swimming. But with a lot of our coastline is owned by the MOD and licensed to the council, so there's extra kind of issues to deal with.
Right. So you get taken out by a nuclear submarine on the swim.
Well, there's lots of unexploded mines and lots of kind of ammunition and things. So
All right. So
we're having to move our swim start to a different beach. I've not taken part in an overseas triathlon. It's something that I normally do a sportif or two cycling event overseas every year. So I definitely want to do my first triathlon abroad, which would be fantastic. But I want to bring and make at least bring one to Southend. I'll see if we can get through all these hurdles that are in front of us, and that'll be about May time, 2017.
Excellent. Thank you, Daniel. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks
on the phone
very much
today. Best of luck for the business and personally for the future.
Thanks very much, and I look forward to inviting you to the first Sundry Triathlon.
And that's it for today. I really hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please do feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin McLeod.